the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get started, I'm dropping my next music video tomorrow for Victim Culture. You can find that, as always, on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KatieTrop, or on my official website, katietrop.net. Look out for it tomorrow. It's another crazy cracker moment, just saying. If you're easily offended, you should probably not watch it, although I feel that about any of my music videos, so look out for it. All right, so let's get right into it with my top 10 MLB power rankings for this week. Starting with number one, no change at all. The New York Yankees still at number one on my top 10. Their overall record, 53-20, still the only team in baseball currently who has even hit the 50 game wins mark. So everybody else is still beneath them. Looks like the next behind them is still the New York Mets. They are at 47 wins. But the Yankees, they are just rolling through. They did have a great series this weekend against the Houston Astros. They also played the Tampa Bay Rays earlier in the week. Aaron Judge still leads the league in home runs. He's got 28 home runs. But damn, this was a great series. You know, I expected it to be a great series. You know, game one on Thursday night was excellent. Already talked about that on Friday's show. But then, so on Friday, the Astros, they got the win in game two. Verlander, he had just an amazing game. As always, he came out and he just absolutely dominated. Jose Altuve had a great game as well. Then in game three, the Houston Astros actually ended up having a combined no-hitter against the Yankees. So the Yankees are the top offense in the league, and they weren't able to even get a hit against the Astros in game three. The no-hitter was with Javier and Neris and Presley were the three pitchers who threw the no-hitter, the combined no-hitter. And then yesterday's game, it was a great way to round it out. You know, it looked like the Astros, they were just rolling again. They were up 3-0. They were still no-hitting the Yankees. They had them down. They had them not score a run for 16 innings, but then all of a sudden Giancarlo Stanton, he steps up to bat in the eighth inning, I believe. Might have been the seventh inning, actually. But regardless, it was one of the later innings. He comes right up to bat, and he knocks one out the park. And so it's 3-1. Astros still with a comfortable lead, but then the Yankees just started getting some guys on base in the following inning. And then DJ LeMahieu comes in. He's got two guys on base, and he ends up hitting this nice hit into the outfield and ties the game up at 3. And then they go into extra innings. I believe they went to the 11th inning, if I recall correctly. And Aaron Judge comes right up to bat. He's got two guys on base. And he was the game one hero in Thursday's matchup. And he comes right up to bat. And, you know, it's really difficult to walk Judge because he had Aaron Rizzo right behind him. And Aaron Rizzo's hitting home runs like no other as well. So, I mean, no matter who you go up against, you're pretty much fucked. But Aaron Judge is the hottest hitter in the league right now. And he comes right up to bat and knocks it right out the park. Yankees walk off with the win yet again. And Yankees are still number one on my top 10. Number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings this week is the Houston Astros. I think with the way they played the Yankees this weekend, they also played the New York Mets earlier in the week. They played them well also. Their overall record right now is 45-27. But like I said, they're just dominating. Their pitching has been lights out. They have one of the most solid pitching cores in the league from start to finish. Their starting pitching is amazing. Their relievers are amazing. Their closer is amazing. So it's going to be really difficult to hit on them, as the Yankees found out. Even though the Yankees got the win yesterday, the Yankees went 16 innings straight without getting a hit off of this team. So this pitching is excellent, and it's really amusing to whenever Jose Altuve comes to bat, in anybody else's home park other than Houston, the greatest thing is listening to the "Fuck Altuve" chant, man. Like, I just love those chants. It's hilarious. He deserves it. But also at the same time, it's hilarious when he comes right up to bat. And I believe it was in game two where he hit the ball right out of the park on the first pitch. So it's just funny to see the "Fuck Altuve" chants, but it's funny to see him come right out, embrace it, and then hit it right out the park. I mean, it's got to feel nice to have that happen. So I've got the Astros at number two, just because they played two great teams this week, two of the top teams this week in the league, and they played them both well. So they definitely deserve to move up in the rankings. So I've got them at number two. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Boston Red Sox. Their overall record right now is 42-31. They currently have the longest winning streak in the league at 7 wins. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games, but I think they've won their last 17 of their last 20 games. Basically, they are the hottest team in the league right now behind the New York Yankees. I think the Yankees have one or two more wins than them in the month of June. But the Red Sox are killing it right now. They just swept the Cleveland Guardians this weekend. And then they also played the Detroit Tigers earlier in the week. Rafael Devers, man, this guy, he is just hitting like no other. He is having a spectacular season. And he's been probably the main reason why their offense has been just lights out lately. JD Martinez also had a great week also. And then the old journeyman, Rich Hill, you never know what you're going to get from that dude. He used to actually be a really solid pitcher back in the day when he was with the Dodgers. And he's been just kind of working his way through. You know, he's had some injuries over the time. But he actually had a really good solid outing this week. And the Red Sox, they just continue to win. Then at number four this week on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the Atlanta Braves, overall record of 42-32. This week they were a little bit cooled off compared to the last week. This week they went up against the Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants. Man, Marcell Ozuna has been having one hell of a season. Not only did he have a spectacular week, but this guy has just been, he's been basically the saving grace and most consistent batter for the Braves so far this season. Also, Swanson, man, he had a great week as well against both the Dodgers and Giants. He really killed the Giants, but he also had a great series against the Dodgers as well. So, and the Braves, they also dodged a huge injury. It looked like Ronald Acuna, he hit a foul ball off his foot, and so you never know what's going to happen with that. Turns out he did not break anything, so that's really good for the Braves. I mean, they've already missed Ozzie Albies. He's going to be out for a couple months with a foot injury. And Acuna just came back, and he's been on fire since he came back. So they really can't afford any more injuries, especially in that batting lineup. But Braves, still, even though they didn't have that great of a week, I still have them up at number four on my top 10, just because they did play some good teams this week as well. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the New York Mets. Overall record of 47-27. The last 10 games are 6-4. This past week, they played the Florida Marlins and the Houston Astros. Pete Alonso just continues to have another great season as well. He basically gets a hit in every game. He's a deciding factor in pretty much every single game this season. Right now, he leads the league in RBIs with 69. And Brandon Nimmo, he had a great week as well. And this team just continues to overcome. The starting pitching, they don't really, it's basically a bunch of no-names right now, and they just continue to strike dudes out. They're a spectacular all-around team. Defensively, they're playing great, and offensively, obviously, they're playing great as well. So I've got the Mets at number five. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings have the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall record of 42-33, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Toronto Blue Jays, and the St. Louis Cardinals. And Rowdy Tellez, man, he just had a great game yesterday, especially. He hit two home runs in one game. Really, just he had a good week overall. He's a very streaky hitter. The last week before this one, he was pretty cold. But this week, he really turned it on, and he was a big reason why the Brewers are back to where they are. Just because the Brewers, they did have a down couple of weeks, but now they seem to be back into the groove. Also, Andrew McCutchen, it seemed like you didn't know what you were going to get from the dude, if he was done, if injuries had just caught up to him, and he just was not going to be the same player. And he's actually been a real nice piece in addition to what the Milwaukee Brewers are doing this year, not only behind the plate with the bat and scoring some plays, but defensively, Andrew McCutchen's been the dude. So look out for what the Brewers are doing, and they lead their division right now currently. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the stupid ass Dodgers, they're back in the top 10. They are overall record of 45-26, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Atlanta Braves and the Cincinnati Reds. Actually, Freddie Freeman, this was the first time he was back in Atlanta. He got his World Series ring, and he also got a great standing ovation, which he 100% deserved because, you know, Freddie Freeman, he was drafted by the Braves. You know, he won an MVP with them. He finally won a World Series last year with them. He's been the catalyst of that team for many seasons since the day he was drafted. It was tough for him to leave the Braves, but I mean, you got to do what you got to do. The Dodgers actually played really, really well in that series. Also, Tony Gonsolin, he is basically the top pitcher in the league right now. He has 9 wins, 0 losses, and has a 158 ERA. Jesus Christ. Couldn't spit that one out. And then also Trey Turner, he still continues to dominate as well. Dodgers had a great week, and they are still number 1 in the NL West as well, which pisses me the fuck off. All right, and at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Philadelphia Phillies. Didn't really think I was going to see them anywhere near my top 10, especially after they fired their manager earlier in the season, but they actually have really turned it around since they kicked Girardi to the curb. Right now, their overall record is 39-35. You'll notice this is actually the third NL East team in my top 10 this week. I had the Mets and the Braves earlier in my top 10, and now I've got the Phillies. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the San Diego Padres and the Texas Rangers. Kyle Schwarber, man, this guy has been probably their best pickup. Well, I don't know. Castellanos has been good as well. But Schwarber, he really hasn't cooled off. He's been hitting him out the park. He's got 21 home runs on the season currently. Castellanos, he did also have a good week as well. He even had a 4-hit game over the weekend. And their only bad news is Bryce Harper. He's been also having a spectacular season, basically competing. You know, he is the reigning NL MVP, and right now it's looking like statistic-wise, he's well on track to be the MVP yet again, or at least be in the running. But unfortunately, this weekend, he was hit by a pitch and broke his thumb. And so he's out indefinitely right now, and obviously you need your thumb if you're going to be hitting out of the park like Bryce Harper does. So we'll see how long he's out. That's probably going to be a huge hit for the Phillies. Now I don't really expect to see them much in my top 10 anymore, but they are here now. And at number 8 this week. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Minnesota Twins. Overall record of 41-33, 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Colorado Rockies and the Cleveland Guardians. Byron Buxton, man, he just continues to hit. I think he's got like 19, 20 home runs right now. I know he's in the top 5 of home runs, so he's hitting them out the park. Kepler, he also is finally starting to catch on. He's a very streaky hitter, but this week he's on his hot streak. And Gio Urshela, man, he just continues to be a great move that the Twins made this offseason, and he's really made a huge difference, not only behind the plate offensively, but he is just he's making some big plays on the defensive side of the ball as well. And then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings are the St. Louis Cardinals. Overall record of 41-34, 4-6 in their last 10 games. So they didn't have that great of a week. This week they played the Chicago Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers. Both teams actually played them pretty well. But honestly, there wasn't really, it was kind of difficult to pick the last couple of teams this week, just because not a lot of impressive baseball was done by anybody else besides the top eight teams, really. Everybody else was pretty streaky, or kind of played 500 ball for the most part. But Paul Goldschmidt, he continues to dominate. He's still hitting in the high 300s right now. And then Tommy Edman, man, he's also having a great season as well. He's been a huge reason why they continue to score at such a high rate right now. And also another notable thing that happened this weekend, there was a huge brawl yesterday between the Seattle Mariners and the Los Angeles Angels. Now, these are two division opponents, so they already kind of have bad blood. But earlier in the weekend, I believe it was, okay, so yesterday was Sunday, so yeah, Friday, Mike Trout had this amazing game against the Mariners, as he normally does, because that is the team he has the most home runs against, and now he actually took over the record of having the most home runs against one team, the Seattle Mariners. I think it's now 53 home runs he has against the Mariners. But basically, he had an amazing game against them on Friday. Then on Saturday, he's up to bat, and he is almost hit by a 95-mile-per-hour pitch that goes up towards his head, and you could tell that shit was on purpose. And even he was real pissed off about it. And when you do something like that, especially to Mike Trout, the leader of that team and the guy who's just, if you can't get him out, you shouldn't be trying to hit him in the head. And he even said in his post-game conference is that if you're going to hit him or try to hit him, at least hit him in the ribs, not in the head. There was some bad blood coming into yesterday's game, not only because they're division rivals, not only because Mike Trout's kicking their ass. Also, this team has played each other, the last week. Basically, they had, one series in between this one. So they've played each other, eight times in the last, week. So they're pretty much sick of looking at each other and sick of playing each other. So this was about to boil over. So when Winker for the Mariners comes up to bat, the pitcher for the Angels at the time he hits Winker. It was completely obvious and intentional. You could tell that it was, and Winker got a little bit pissed off, and he starts running over to the Angels bench, and then an actual brawl breaks out. Now, one of the great things about watching these brawls is that I love to see the guys who are pretending to fight. You know, there are some dudes in there who are actually throwing some real-ass punches trying to fuck somebody up. But then there's the dudes on the outskirts who are, acting like they're throwing shit and they're not doing nothing. But it's always fun to see those brawls. And this was a real one. It was bad blood between the two teams. The Angels did end up getting the win anyways. It was an interesting event that happened in baseball this weekend. A rundown of some of the top pitchers in the league currently at this point. I did mention Tony Gonsolin with the Dodgers. He's basically the top pitcher in the league right now. He's got 9 wins, 0 losses, and has a 1.58 ERA, which is the lowest ERA in the league right now. Then you've got Shane McClanahan with the Tampa Bay Rays, man. The Tampa Bay Rays, they know how to find starting pitching. If there is one thing that the Rays have been just great at, is getting starting pitching. And not just, finding decent dudes. They find, Cy Young award-winning guys. I mean, there are... Over the last 10 years, you can just name some really great pitchers that have come up through the Tampa Bay Rays farm system, and then eventually they trade them. So this is probably what they're going to do to McClanahan at some point. But he has just been lights out. I mean, he actually wasn't too bad last year, especially towards the end. He was just the strikeout king, and he continues to be the strikeout king this year. He's got 8 wins and a 1.77 ERA, but he's had the most strikeouts in the league since the end of last season. So he's just killing it for the Rays. Then you also have Sandy Alcantara, who's just kind of come out of nowhere for the Florida Marlins. He's got 7 wins on the season with a 1.95 ERA, and basically Alcantara has been in the top 5 for the lowest ERA all season long. He actually started out as the lowest ERA, I want to say, for like the first month of the season, and now it's, of course, kind of shifted a little bit because now there's more games played and more things going on, but Alcantara, he's just had a solid season for the Florida Marlins. Then you have Martin Perez for the Texas Rangers. He's another guy who's kind of come out of nowhere. You didn't really see dominating. Right now, he's got 5 wins with a 1.96 ERA. Then you got Manoah playing for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's also dominating. He's got 9 wins on the season with a 2.05 ERA. Joe Musgrove for the San Diego Padres, he's been lights out as well. 8 wins with a 2.12 ERA. And then rounding out the solid pitching this season is Justin Verlander, 9 wins with a 2.22 ERA. So those are the top pitchers in the league right now. And really, they've been the most dominant guys from start all the way up until this point. So we'll see what happens with the rest of the season. But it's pretty crazy because, you know, you got some no-names in there, kind of like Gonsolin, who's kind of like he's worked his way up with the Dodgers, but you didn't really expect him to be the league leader in starting pitching. Then you got McClanahan, the new young guy. Then you've got the Musgroves and the Verlanders, the guys who've been here for a while, and, you know, they're still dominating. So the pitching this season, while the home runs have been out of control, the pitching's also been great as well. And now let's move on to the College Baseball World Series. Thank God, Ole Miss. Thank you, Ole Miss, for winning. And not only winning, but just swept the shit out of the Oklahoma Sooners. I was going to be so upset if I had to see the Oklahoma Sooners win a College Baseball World Series. Thankfully, they did not. You know, the Sooners were basically like the hottest team in college baseball up until the College Baseball World Series. Now, Ole Miss, they were the exact opposite. They did have a great tournament, but they were basically the final team to make the tournament. They were the final at-large bid, so they basically just backed their way into this tournament. Nobody expected them to do shit. Game one, they slaughtered Oklahoma. It ended up being a 10-3 final score, which is a big deal. I mean, it was kind of close in like the fourth and fifth inning, but then Ole Miss just busted shit wide open, and they just ran off with it. Then game two yesterday, it was a much closer game, but Ole Miss stepped away, and they ended up getting the win 4-2, and they won their first national championship. So congratulations to Ole Miss, and thank you so much for beating the Oklahoma Sooners so I didn't have to talk about them winning a national championship in baseball. All right, and moving on to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, we also have a champion there, a new champion, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They were actually the 2-time defending champs, and they got slaughtered by the Colorado Avalanche, who won in Game 6 last night. And, I mean, the Avalanche, they were obviously the best team this year. They owned the regular season. They just skated on through the postseason. And then they got to, this was probably their most difficult matchup of the postseason. But they still basically ran away with it. I mean, they were up 2-0 at one point. The Lightning were able to get back into it game 3. There was a little bit of controversy in game 4 as to how the Colorado Avalanche won. Whatever, they still won. Then the Lightning ended up getting another win. And so we ended up getting to game 6, and Avalanche just absolutely dominated last night. And their MVP ended up being Kale Macker, I think is how you say his last name. I could be wrong. But he had 29 points in 20 games throughout this playoff series. So obviously he deserved it. The star for the Avalanche, Nate MacKinnon, basically the captain of their team. He didn't really have a great finals appearance, but in Game 6 last night, he actually ended up with two scores, and he came up big when they needed him. So congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche on their third Stanley Cup Finals of all time. Their first in like 19, 20 years, something like that. So they ended up taking out the defending champs. So they are now the new Stanley Cup Finals champions. And just a little bit of NFL news. Not much going on in the NFL. They did announce that we're basically a month away from training camps. Basically, the majority of the training camps start on July 26th or in that range. So that week is when they start. And so, yeah, we're about a month out. So with that being said, we do still have some pretty decent free agents left on the market. We've got Odell Beckham Jr., who's still out there, the wide receiver, who just spent the last half of the season with the Los Angeles Rams, won a Super Bowl with them. But he did tear his ACL in the Super Bowl, so there's a good chance that he's going to be missing at least the first month or two of the season. So it's not really shocking he's still out there. I'm sure he's going to be picked up in not too long, just because he is, when healthy, he's a solid receiver, and he doesn't need to be the number one guy anymore. If he ends up being your number two or number three receiver, that's a great number two or number three to have. Then also left out there is Julio Jones, another good wide receiver. He just spent the last season with the Tennessee Titans. I didn't think that was a good fit. I didn't think it was going to be good, was going to be a good fit from the start, and it did not end up being a good fit. So, but I still think Julio Jones, he's a solid receiver. He used to be the best receiver in the league. So we'll see where he ends up as well. Once again, I feel it's the same thing with Odell Beckham Jr. Julio can definitely come in as a number two or number three guy, and you are golden with that as your number two or number three. Then you also have the offensive tackle, Dwayne Brown, who's still out there. He just spent his career with the Seattle Seahawks. He did have a down year last year, but he switched from, I believe, from right to left or left to right. I can't recall which side he switched to, but it wasn't the normal side that he played on. Also, the Seahawks were an awful team, so who knows if it was really his fault. But I still think he's a solid offensive lineman, and whoever picks him up is getting a solid player, and it's actually kind of shocking that he's still out there. Then you also have defensive end Justin Houston, who's still out there, and that guy's been a beast wherever he goes. He actually had a great season last year with the Baltimore Ravens. He was basically the best guy on defense, which says a lot because their defense is usually always good. Justin Houston, he's still out there. So, I could see him making an impact with a team, whoever he signs with. Then you also have Ndamukong Suh, defensive tackle, still out there. While he's getting up there in age, he could still run a motherfucker down. He's still got that edge on him. So depending on where he goes, I think he could also be a great addition to a team. Then you have cornerback Kevin King, who just spent the last season with the Green Bay Packers. He actually was having a really, really good season, but then ended up suffering a season-ending injury, which is why I think he's still out on the market, because before the beginning of last season, you know, he had a good season to start, and then, like I said, got injured. But before that, he was kind of just a journeyman type dude. He wasn't really a lockdown corner, but he really turned it on last year. So I think he could definitely be a good addition to a team. And then you've got Dante Hightower, the linebacker, who just played with the New England Patriots. Now, he did have a down season. And then he took the COVID year off. But prior to taking the COVID year off, he actually was one of the top linebackers in the league. So I still think he has potential to be a very good linebacker. Who knows if it was more just him being in the Patriots system is why he did so well. But, I mean, depending on your linebacking core, if you've got a pretty deep, solid linebacking core, I think Hightower could be a great addition for some depth. And then the last notable free agent out there is defensive end Carl Nassib, who was with the Las Vegas Raiders this last season. I think it's kind of weird that he's still out there. He's a very solid defensive end. But I would like to point out he is the only openly gay player in the league. Could that be a reason why he's not signed? Would not surprise me. I guess that just goes to show why a lot of guys, a lot of athletes who are in the closet don't come out. Because if you happen to be kind of like Carl Nassib, who's like, he's a good player, but he's not like a game-changing player. So, I mean, he could still be a free agent even had he not come out as gay. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's playing a role as to why he has yet to be signed. Just because, you know, he's young, he's a good player, he's a solid player. Like I said, he's not like a number one defensive end, but I think it's kind of shocking that he's still out there. So we'll see. I expect him to be signed with somebody, but I don't know. It's not a good look for the NFL to have the openly gay guy unsigned, and he's a pretty solid player. Like I said, not the greatest player, not like a number one guy. He's obviously not like Aaron Donald or anything like that, but still a good player and probably shouldn't still be on the free agent market. So we'll see if he gets picked up. And then speaking of defensive ends, now I was on Twitter this weekend, just kind of scrolling through. I don't usually spend a whole lot of time on social media, especially these days, because all you get is barraged with people in their crappy loser political opinions. No matter what they are, I can't stand political opinions. So I don't spend a whole lot of time scrolling through social media. But when I do, something will catch my eye, and what I saw this weekend definitely caught my eye. I happen to follow J.J. Watt on Twitter. I follow him just because I think he's a spectacular player, but also he's fine as hell. And sometimes he will post some thirst trap photos of him, you know, working out or shirtless, and I thank him for that. So I was just, you know, scrolling through Twitter, and all of a sudden I see this great picture of J.J. Watt, of him in the gym, shirtless with this like nice ass 12-pack looking all ripped, and the caption is "working on this dad bod," and I just start laughing because it's just obviously the exact opposite of what we normally refer to as the dad bod. But I just would like to throw it out there, y'all, that that's what I call a dad bod. That's the dad bod I want to motherfucking see, is the straight up yoked up motherfucker with his like 12 pack looking fine as hell. Thank you, JJ, for posting that as well. Maybe you and Aaron Donald could start doing like workouts together, and you can just post all these great shirtless pictures of the two of you working out and looking fine as hell, because yeah, that's what I like most about Twitter. And these fine-ass athletes being thirst traps on social media. That's the best part about social media right there. Not the political trash. But, yeah, keep up the good work, JJ. Hopefully you don't get injured next year. But regardless, you are working out. That's for damn sure. All right, and now let's get to Trop 5 list today. Well, since Freddie Freeman, I had mentioned he played the Atlanta Braves this week. He went to Atlanta. It was a homecoming for him. He actually had a pretty good series against them. Nothing where he like had a game winner or any type of thing like that, but that got me thinking. And so today's Trop 5 list is going to be the Trop 5 player performances versus their old teams. So basically I went through, and these guys are not only legends of the game or sport that they're in, but they're just straight up legends. And they're also legends for the team that they left. And some of these were some very impressive performances. So let's start off with number five. That would be Ken Griffey Jr., one of the greatest baseball players of all time, one of my favorites for sure. He was drafted by the Seattle Mariners, and then eventually he was drafted in 1989, and he was there from 1989 to 1999. Then he had moved on to the Cincinnati Reds, and he was with the Reds from 2000 to 2008. I'm not going to mention all the teams that all of these players ended up on. I'm really just going to be talking about the team that they were on, that they had to face with their new team, basically. Ken Griffey Jr. did end up playing for a couple other teams as well. I believe he played for the White Sox in the 2009 season or the 2008 season. And then he ended his career the 2009-2010 season with the Seattle Mariners. So when he did move on to the Cincinnati Reds, the game he played against them was on June 24th, 2007, Cincinnati Reds versus the Seattle Mariners. He had a great game. He ended up going for 3-for-4 with 2 home runs and 2 RBIs, but unfortunately it ended up being a 3-2 loss. So that was shitty, but he at least had a really solid game against his old team. And I mean, you know, Ken Griffey Jr., like I said, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, one of the most exciting players to watch. It's actually unfortunate that he never won a World Series, because in my opinion, he's probably like, you know, if you're thinking about all the players who are really good who never won a championship, as far as baseball goes, Ken Griffey Jr. is probably number one on my list of that one. Maybe I'll have to do a top five one of these days with that kind of a list. But Ken Griffey Jr., he is number five, Reds, when he played for the Reds against his old team, the Mariners. Then at number four on my top five player performances versus their old team, Shaquille O'Neal, when he versus the Los Angeles Lakers, or versus Kobe Bryant, because we all know that was what it really was all about. But basically, Shaq played for the Lakers from 1996 to 2004. Then he moved on to the Miami Heat from 2004 to 2008. He did win 3 championships with the Los Angeles Lakers, and he also ended up winning 1 with the Miami Heat. If you don't recall, it was a very heated, contentious end for Shaq and the Lakers. And it was basically, you know, just Kobe could not stand working with Shaq. Shaq could not stand working with Kobe. Kobe was always calling out his work ethic. And I would like to point out, it's kind of funny that after Shaq was traded, he never dominated ever again. So Kobe might have had a point. I love Shaq. I love what he did for the organization. And I respect the hell out of Shaq in his entire career, no matter what team he was on. But he really did start to fall off once he got traded to the Heat. It was also kind of funny because his big gripe was he didn't want to be like second best to Kobe Bryant, but he was happy to take the second player role when Dwayne Wade was with the Heat. Don't get me wrong, that's not a diss at Dwayne Wade. I also respect the fucking shit out of Dwayne Wade as well. I'm just pointing out that Shaq had issues with Kobe, and he decided to play second fiddle and fall off in Miami. But regardless, when he was playing with Miami, the Miami Heat were 3-1 versus the Lakers in the 4 matchups that they played each other. So Shaq did get the better of all of these matchups, starting with the most anticipated game of that season, the first season he left, December 25th, 2004, Miami Heat versus the Los Angeles Lakers on Christmas Day. And it was a battle. The Heat did end up winning in overtime, 104 to 102. Shaq's stat line was he went 11 for 19, 2 for 7 on the free throws, 11 rebounds, and 24 total points. Kobe Bryant actually ended up having 43 points. And this also happened to be one of my favorite Kobe Bryant moments, not during the game, but after the game, because the reason why they lost the game is Kobe ended up missing a couple of shots, and he was so pissed off at himself that he was missing those shots that right after that game, he went onto the court and was practicing all the shots that he missed. And he just would not get off the court until he knocked down the shots that he felt he needed to knock down. So that is one of my favorite Kobe Bryant moments, even though they lost that game. But this was a crazy game. I remember just how contentious it was. And we were all wondering if Shaq and Kobe were going to give each other a high five or whatever. It was crazy. But the Heat did end up winning, and it was a good ass game. Then the next game was March 17th of 2005 in that same season. The Miami Heat absolutely walloped the Los Angeles Lakers 102-89. Shaq's stat line was 11 for 19. He went 3 for 9 with the free throws, with 12 rebounds and a total of 25 points. Kobe had 26 points in that one. And then the third straight matchup was December 25th, 2005, so the following Christmas. The Heat would end up winning that one, another close matchup, 97-92. And Shaq's stat line was he went 8 for 18, 2 for 5 on the free throws, with 17 rebounds and a total of 18 points. And Kobe ended up with 37 points total. One thing I would like to point out, and kind of why I made Shaq low on this list, is just because the Lakers teams he went up against were garbage-ass teams. We didn't even have Pau Gasol yet. It was just basically Kobe and Lamar Odom. And other than that, you know, we had fucking Smush Parker and a whole bunch of other trash they were just garbage-ass teams. So the fact that Shaq did end up going 3-1 versus this Lakers team, good for him. I'm sure he was real happy about it, but still, it's not that impressive just because those Lakers teams were basically Kobe and everybody else. And you could tell by the stat line as well, because it was actually kind of fun to go back and just read the box scores. And it's basically just like Kobe, 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 Kobe. Maybe stupid-ass Smush Parker here or Luke Walton there. But for the most part, man, it was all Kobe all the time during those couple of years versus the Miami Heat and the Shaqless years. All right, moving on to number three on my top five player performances versus their old teams. Wayne Gretzky, when he played with the Edmonton Oilers from 1979 to 1988, he won 4 championships with the Oilers, but he would eventually move on to the Los Angeles Kings. He played with them from 1988 to 1996, and in the first year that he played with the Kings, in the 1989 semifinals, they would end up facing the Edmonton Oilers. The Kings would be down 3-1 in the series, and they ended up making a historic comeback, which was just crazy and also so Gretzky. And they would end up winning in 7 games. Now, Gretzky would never win a title with the Kings. His legacy basically is with Edmonton, as it should be. But it definitely was a huge moment for Gretzky to come back down 3-1 in the playoffs like that against his old team. Then at number 2 on my top 5 player performances versus their old teams. Now, number 1 and 2, I'm going to keep it real. It was really, really tough for me to pick between these two guys because, real talk, when I go off on the stats on what they did, they annihilated their old teams. Also, I wanted to put number 2 and number 1 just because of how legendary this player is. But number 1, he was undefeated against his old team, whereas number 2 is not. So number 2 is Brett Favre. He played with the Green Bay Packers from 1992 to 2007. Then he would move on to the New York Jets for the 2008 season. But then he signed as a free agent with the Minnesota Vikings 2009 and 2010. And he did win a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. He won a few MVPs with the Green Bay Packers. He's basically one of the most legendary players the Green Bay Packers have ever had. And for him to go play with the Minnesota Vikings was a big deal. You know, it was a bad end for the Packers and Favre. Basically, the Packers wanted him to retire. He didn't want to retire. They basically forced him into retirement, and that kind of pissed him off. They did end up trading him to the Jets, and then he would end up getting his way and hitting the free agent market, and he went straight for Minnesota because he wanted to face the Packers twice a year. So, of course, this was heavily anticipated. And the first matchup being on October 5th, 2009. And Brett Favre went off. They won the game 30-23. His stat line is he went 24 for 31 for 271 yards and three touchdowns. Then they would play each other again November 1st of 2009, in which the Vikings trounced the Packers 38-26. He went 17 for 28 with 244 yards and four touchdowns. So Brett Favre owned them in the 2009 season. This Vikings team would go on. They were the top team in the NFC. They were the number one overall seed. They would go on to have a pretty decent playoff run until they went up against the New Orleans Saints, who then would go on to win their first and only Super Bowl that they've ever had. But that first season Brett Favre was with the Vikings, they were a great team. The 2010 season wasn't as successful. As a matter of fact, the two times they played the Packers, they lost. And so that's why I couldn't put him at number one, because number one was 4-0 against his old team. But so yeah, I got Brett Favre at number two. So at number one on my top five player performances versus their old teams, I've got Drew Brees. Drew Brees played with the San Diego Chargers from 2001 to 2005. In the 2005 season, last game of the season, we all knew this was Drew Brees' last season with the Chargers. We all knew they were moving on. But unfortunately, in the last game of the season, Drew Brees would completely just annihilate his rotator cuff, and which is just awful because you're just going into the free agency period. You know, Brees already kind of had like an up and down career with San Diego. And so his free agency was just up in the air just because of what happened with his shoulder. So New Orleans took a chance on him and they signed him, and he ended up having one of the most legendary careers. You know, Drew Brees would not, we never thought of him as a Hall of Famer when he was with the Chargers. Once he hit New Orleans, everything changed, and he became one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time from his time in New Orleans. So he played with New Orleans from 2006 to 2020. He did win a Super Bowl with New Orleans. And so, like I said, with San Diego, it wasn't a horrible ending, but it wasn't like a happy ending either. They didn't believe in him. And really, nobody believed in Drew Brees except for the Saints. But Drew Brees faced off against the San Diego Chargers four times in his career, and all four times he stomped them to the curb. Starting off on October 26th, 2008, the Saints won 37-32, close matchup. Drew Brees went 30 for 41 with 339 yards and three touchdowns. Then on October 7th of 2012, the Saints would win 31-24. Drew Brees went 29 for 45 with 370 yards passing and four touchdowns. So that was obviously the best performance he had against San Diego. But man, he really wanted to take it to him in that one. Then on October 2nd of 2016, close matchup, Saints would win 35-34. Drew Brees went 23 for 36 with 207 yards, two touchdowns and two interceptions. And then the final matchup of October 12th of 2020, another close matchup. Saints would win 30-27. Drew Brees went 33 for 47, 325 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. So that's why I had to put Drew Brees number one. I really did battle back and forth between him and Favre just because, you know, when Favre left the Packers, that was a really big deal. And he is one of the most legendary quarterbacks of all time. And it was just so crazy to see him in another uniform, playing in the same division and kicking the shit out of them. But when I saw Drew Brees went 4-0 against San Diego with the stats, you know, especially that one in 2012 where he went for 370 yards and four touchdowns, that's impressive as hell. And yeah, that's just Drew Brees in a nutshell, man. 4-0 against San Diego. And that's my top five player performances versus their old teams. And, you know, we got a great week of sports ahead of us. We got a ton of baseball. And enjoy the week of sports. And I will talk to you fools on Friday. Peace out, homies.